Okay, today is week three. So this week, as I explained in the first week, we focus each week on one letter, just my way of organizing the class. I always have a different way of doing things. It's always inside out. So this week is the letter Vav. And for Vav, Vav is a letter that appears and disappears in words, but you can still hear it. So for me, the letter Vav represents involvement. We're always involved in things, but sometimes we're involved in an obvious way where we're seen, and sometimes we're involved from behind the scenes. So you can't see us, but you can still feel the presence. So that's what we're going to focus on this week in many different ways. But first, we're going to do a homework review. So I don't know if you guys are thinking about your homework, but the homework for this last week was thinking about anger and managing anger. So I just want to refocus on that for a minute. So managing anger, we talked about last time, that there really is no place at all for anger in a Jewish home, in a Jewish life. That doesn't mean that you have to be superhuman and hold it all in. It means that it's a lifelong exercise to work on yourself so that you're not holding in anger, you're not becoming angry. It's a different thing. It means reframing things, looking at things differently, processing things differently, and training yourself over decades. This is not a one-year project. And this is not a short-term project. This is a lifetime project to train yourself over decades where you don't have to become angry about things at all, ever. You can start by faking it. Sometimes it does mean holding it back. Sometimes it does mean putting it off. Sometimes it does mean saving it until later. But to think about your anger policy, how anger works in your life, how it's in your household, and how you want to set an example of strength for your marriage, for your children, and for those around you, of how you deal with your own personal anger. And it does make a difference. The example that you set and the way the relationship that you have with anger affects the entire household. Come on in. Don't say hi, I'm back there. Let's see. Hi. I think are there a few, and there's a few more papers, right? Are there any more? Nope. There's not. Whoever didn't get a paper, if you email me, I'll send you the paper. Okay. If you want to. I think, do we, how many more do we need? You guys can share, right?
Yeah.
And you? And you two can share. That's it. We're good.
Do I need any more?
No. Then why should you leave? Yeah. Oh, you have? Great. Okay. All right. So we're just doing a homework review from last week where we're talking about anger. So I wanted to just bring you three tools to help with anger management. Now, in this class, because we are, it's such a broad spectrum of life experience, marriage experience, age, religious experience, knowledge, I'm sure you already know by now, but I'm not giving you the basics of how you get along in a marriage. This is a more esoteric level and more Jewish information that you can only get from Jews. So if you want to get something that's more like how do you get along in a regular argument, read a book. There's lots of books about it. That's not where we're going right now. Okay.
Oh, my teenager is crazy.
Right. Right. Everybody's teenager is crazy, so. Yeah. Help, my teenager is crazy.
Hi.
Okay, here are some tools to help in managing anger. One is clarity of goal. If you can get clear on your goal, that anger is something that you don't want to have in your life, and really work on that goal to achieve clarity in it, that's tool number one. You have to have a destination or you can't get there. So you really have to carve out for yourself and create inside yourself, what is my goal in terms of having anger in my home or not? And then you can work on achieving it. But you do have to have clarity of goal. Number two is cheshbon hanefesh. So in this case, it's a specific cheshbon hanefesh, more of a post-mortem. And this will be the homework exercise for today, is thinking about it after the fact. This is a technique that's very helpful in dealing with all kinds of negative things. So whether it's having a hard time getting kids out the door in the morning, let's say with lots of little children and it's not working and lunches aren't being packed. Play one day. I had a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, and twin 1-year-olds at this time. And no household help at this time. And my husband was the Manhattan lawyer, left the house 6:30 in the morning, came back 11 o'clock at night, so it was my job to get the 5-year-old and 4-year-old out the door to the bus with the twins.
Oh my God.
Right? Okay, so one morning, the 4-year-old, who has a little ADD, and so does his mom, cannot find the coat for this child and can't get the right lunch. And I finally get lunch made, and I get the kid, both kids ready, and I can't find his coat. So I grab the baby's coat, size 2, he's size 4, put it on him, the sleeves are up to here, right? I'm dragging the 5-year-old and the 4-year-old out to the bus stop, running. The bus is down the street. I'm like, run! And he drops his lunch bag. Everything's all over the floor. So, thinking quickly, I unzip the hood from the coat. I pick up the lunch. I put it in the hood. I tie it in a knot. I put it in his hand, and on he goes on the bus. Right? So five-year-old and four-year-old on the bus. Meanwhile, I'd left the twins in the house standing on a chair watching out the door for me. It's one block away. So I'm coming back saying, Ms. Morlitoda, thank you, God, that I got them on the bus, and I don't have to drive half an hour to Far Rockaway to bring them there. And I'm thinking about this child, how he's going to get off the bus in front of his teachers with sleeves up to here, a coat up to here, and his lunch in the hood. Right. So after a morning like that, you might want to reconsider your procedures. How is it that you're preparing the children? Maybe you might think to yourself, okay, you have a little problem keeping track of coats. Maybe at night you want to line them up. It's something just to think about. How are you going to manage it? Or get lunches ready at night, or make sure your ingredients are there, or whatever it is. But you want to not just say, Ms. Morlitoda, it all worked, which I did say on a regular basis, and I memorized it so that I could say it for that. But not just regularly say, thank you, God, it worked for me, but plan how you're going to be in partnership with God that it could work for you again. So take the time to actually plan a strategy. If the kids are crying over their tights, so I had one daughter who cried all the time over the seam over the toes on the tights, was never comfortable. So plan extra time to get the tights on, or search for extra tights, not in the morning, but another time. But if you take the time to plan and re-strategize and see when is it that you're beginning to yell, what is the trigger for that, and how can you interrupt that cycle? How can you take the time to plan? It makes a difference.
Okay, so this is really, pretty obvious. I mean, it seems like children.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you work that with your husband?
Okay, great. So you have to figure, what's your trigger point? What is your trigger point? Your husband comes in the door, right? Or you come in the door, your husband's home already, right? You're coming home because you're working, right? And he's working too. He gets home at 5:30, you walk in at 6:15. He's reading and hungry, you're hungry, and there is nothing done. And you're thinking, that's not right. I work a full day. How come he couldn't open the fridge? How come he couldn't put up a pot of water? And you start to yell because you're hungry and cranky, and you walked in the door, and he's sitting and reading and relaxing and waiting for you to get dinner ready, right? So now you have to see, where's your trigger? Is that where you're starting to yell, when you walk in the door? Or is it when you've asked him, why is he sitting there? Or is it when he asks you, what's for dinner? What's the point? What's the point that the yelling starts? So you need to think about that, or the frustration or the anger, even if it's not yelling, but where is it coming from? And so the first thing is to notice what are the patterns that are happening, and then do that post-mortem. Gosh, I'm so frustrated about the way it happened when I came home tonight. This you do on your own at night before you go to sleep, sitting up so you don't fall asleep while you're doing it. But you want to think to yourself, okay, I came in hungry. That was part of the problem. I need to keep a snack in the car. I've got to eat something on the way home from work so that I don't come in hungry. Or I've got to start doing crock pots in the morning. Or I've got to sit down with my husband and talk to him about how we're going to handle the food. Now that I'm working and I'm come home after him on a regular basis, we really have to sit down and talk about it. There's not kids in the house anymore, and we both need to be working on the food. We're both working outside the house. We both need to be working inside the house. So a powwow about it. But you do need to think about what is your trigger point and how can you fix it. Let's say you have a husband who, there's no way, he's from an older generation, there's no way he's cooking. That's just not happening. So maybe you've accepted that already. Maybe not. Maybe you'll have to work that out. But maybe you have. So then you do have to think about what are your strategies Maybe you can leave him a task. He's not going to cook, but he could chop. Please chop these three things when you come home. Whatever it is, but you need to think about how it's going to work and then make changes so that you're not coming home regularly hungry to a guy who's sitting reading asking you what's for dinner. So, and you have to think about your whatever stress point it is, so replay it. So, for instance, it's easy to think about with kids. It's good to think about with a husband, too. Now you came in and you yelled when he said, what's for dinner? And he said, I can't believe you're asking me. How come you got home first? How come it's my job all the time? So now you need to also practice a new sentence after you've thought about. So practice saying, and you might even want to say it out. You'll have to think of a few sentences. So first you might come out with, I'm also hungry. Why is it my job? That's not going to work so well. And you need to practice a sentence until you find a sentence that you think might work in that situation and say it a few times. One year, I decided I was not going to teach at night because my family really needed me at night and I really felt like I needed to be home. So I decided I made a commitment for 1 year. I'm not taking any nighttime teaching jobs, which is very difficult. It's one thing not to do a series. It's another thing when somebody calls and asks you to do a one-time thing or, you know, whatever it is. So I had to actually practice in front of a mirror saying, thank you very much for the offer. I am not taking any jobs at night this year. And I had to practice it a few times so that it would come out when I needed it to. So, but I'm not exaggerating. Sometimes it's important to create the physical pathway for a shift in behavior. So sometimes you really do need to say the sentence, the actual one that you're planning. Say it. You could say it in front of a mirror. You could say it by yourself. But actually say it a few times, so that you create a shift in behavior that you'll be able to fall back on. It's sort of like practicing emergency exits or having a fire drill. You actually need to walk it. Research shows that if you actually walk it, that it goes into your nervous system and when your brain isn't functioning because you're too nervous about the actual fire in the building, your body has practiced and it takes you out the route that you've tried. So in a stress situation, if you've practiced a new sentence, it's much easier to get it out. So I think that's important. Okay, so the cheshbon hanefesh, the post-mortem, what went wrong, how could I make it better, what am I planning to do next time that will be different? Actually get to the plan. Okay, now here's another small concept that I think is important, which just helps in anger in a lot of places, whether it's in your relationship or in your relationship with others, and that is a shalom fund. Is anybody familiar with a shalom fund? So a shalom fund, shalom is a mitzvah. So we pay for mitzvahs, right? Think about the matzah that we're about to buy. It's about $3.50 per cracker at $20 a pound. There's six in a pound. It's a lot. We're going to spend a lot of money. We're about to spend $500 on cleaning help to make sure there's not a tam-tam under a dresser. So, right? We pay for mitzvahs in our life. So shalom is a mitzvah. And it's a mitzvah that we can pay for. So if we set aside money, and you can do this in two ways, either just as a concept, you pay for shalom, or you actually budget money and put it in a mayonnaise jar, this is my shalom fund, then you can use that when stressors arise. For instance, your friend borrows your dress for a simcha and returns it to you torn. You now have to take it to somebody and get it fixed. And it's going to cost you $20. So either you can go to your friend and discuss it, or you can take 20 bucks out of your shalom fund. You don't have to be angry at all because you set aside the money for shalom and pay the tailor with that, and it's done. So it helps in a lot of different situations where somebody's mooching off of you and you don't know how to deal with it. Sometimes you need to be able to, mooching, what's mooching? How do you say that in Hebrew? snoring, that's Yiddish, but taking from you. Like, let's say somebody, this happens in my life with teenagers, let's say you have a teen, a friend of one of your own, who comes over all the time around 6 o'clock. And you're thinking, right. And it's a regular thing, and it's starting to add up. A teenage boy particularly could add, you know, tens of dollars a week into your grocery bill if they're around on a regular basis. So you either have to discuss with the person about schedules, or you can take that out of your shalom fund. Let's say, now, let's make it marital, right? Let's say you asked your husband to drop off, your husband asked you to drop off his suit for an affair coming up, and you didn't take it to the cleaners. Now, you could take it to a one-hour cleaner for more money, but it's going to cost more money. That would be something he could take out of the shalom fund, whether it's, and maybe you even need to hire a neighbor kid to just take it over for you. You don't have the time right now. So it's $10 to hire the neighbor kid to bring it to the cleaners, and it's an extra $10 because you're bringing it to the 1-hour cleaners instead of the overnight cleaners. But that $20 does not, you don't have to have an argument. It costs $20 extra. Your suit's going to be clean on time. Take the $20 out of the Shalom fund and forget about it. So there's different times when you can use that. Sometimes you might choose to use it. You can be creative about how you use the fund depending on how you budget it. But having a and this is something you need to sit down with your husband and discuss. Here's a concept. To buy Shalom in our home, we need to set aside money for this mitzvah of creating Shalom. So whether it's conceptual or actually set aside cash, there's things to do with that. One time we hired a photographer for an affair who did a horrible job. And I really didn't want to, I didn't want albums. I didn't want those pictures. It just looked so terrible. I called the Rav and I asked him what I should do. We already told the guy we're going to give him $750. And I couldn't see, I couldn't even pick from the proofs like something I would put in an album that I why would I want that? So the Rav told me he understood. We had already paid him something. I said, that's fine. I'm happy to pay him like half because he was there. I don't want the albums. So the Rav told me that he has money. He has a Shalom fund, and he's willing to pay him the rest out of the Shalom fund. And then I realized the guy doesn't have a, I mean, the guy's a poor guy, and he needed the parnassa. So as we said, this is a guy who needs the income. Maybe he didn't do such a great job, but he said, I have a Shalom fund, I'll pay the rest. And I said, you know what, I have a Shalom fund, I could pay the rest. So it was good to be reminded that you could use it. Sometimes it's a bigger amount. But I had a Shalom fund. I didn't need to humiliate the guy. Why didn't I need, I mean, anyway, I had bad pictures. I needed to also tell the guy, you did a terrible job. I hate the pictures. I didn't. I still would have bad pictures, whether the guy's humiliated or not. So I might as well not humiliate him, have my bad pictures, and have Shalom. I just don't have to hire him again. And I wouldn't recommend him to somebody else. But I don't have to make the guy feel bad. So you can figure out how you want to use a Shalom fund in your life. Okay, now let's move to the letter Vav. So I'm going to start with the letter Vav itself. The letter Vav is an interesting letter. It is a letter that brings things together. It's a hook. It's shaped like a hook. And it's an and, so you hang things on it because it connects. But let's just look at the shape of it for a minute. The letter Vav is a masculine letter, and it's shaped like an elongated yud. The yud is a masculine letter also. The yud is the same shape as the seed of life, and it's through the yud our sages tell us that the upper worlds were created. So really, if you think about seeds creating potential, then the seed that a man gives to a woman is shaped like a yud, and that is the potential. It has all the genetic material for life. The upper worlds were created with a yud. The lower world, the world that we live in, was created with the letter he. What is the sound of the letter hey? Anybody? How do you say the letter hey? Just, right? It's breath. The letter hey is the letter of breath. And this world is created through breath. God breathed our souls into us. And the world is created through speech. So this world is the shadow of the spiritual world. The two worlds work together, the yud and the hey. And the yud and the hey, of course, forms the name of God. But the yud, the other name of God that we use that we don't pronounce, is a yud and a hey and a vav and a hey. So it's masculine, feminine, masculine, feminine. That is the name of God. And the hay, the actual shape of the hay, is shaped like a birth canal, but things can exit through that. So that we have this balance of yud and hay and vav and hay, the yud and the vav looking very masculine when you put them together. One shorter and one longer, but they're the same shape. So the vav itself is considered a masculine letter for that reason. Not only for that, but the vav actually is a connector. So the vav, the numerical value is 6, right? If you do Aleph, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, you get to number 6. 6 is a channel into nextness. We'll just say that for a minute. So if you have 6 days of the week, the 7th day is Shabbos. The sixth day is Friday, and the whole week channels through Friday, goes through the bridge of the letter Vav. The Vav here creates the bridge from the 6 days of the week into Shabbos. The Vav, if it refers, and the Vav, the sixth sphera, the world was created through seven spherot. The sixth sphera is the sphera of Yesod, of foundation, and it's related to Joseph, whose trait was really sexual control, foundation. That's what it is, Yesod. His ability to not have relations with the wife of his boss, Potiphar, Eshet Potiphar, was a very strong ability. He was 17 years old, height of male hormones, and he was beautiful. He's the only male in the entire Torah that we're told is beautiful. So he was a beautiful 17-year-old hormonal man, and he was able to overcome his sexual urges, even when the house was emptied out and he was really tempted. So that is definitely connected into the letter Vav. So the letter Vav is the letter that bridges the flow of the week into Shabbos, and then it also provides a bridge from the flow of the man into a woman. That's what carries the seed, Yesod, carries the seed into the woman. So the Vav really is a bridge that creates an and, the man and the woman, and the flow goes between them. So it's the letter Vav here that is about involvement. So what do we do as a kala under the chuppah? Seven circles around our husbands. Right? What are those seven circles? Does anybody know? So we walk seven times around, and it's actually, I hate to make everything sexual, but a lot of things are. It's actually very sexual. She is creating the space in which he dwells. He stands there like a letter Vav, and she surrounds him like the letter He, seven times spinning her world around him. Just the same way that Hashem created this world through seven spherot, she walks around him seven times and says, I will create your universe. I'll spend seven different ways, use these same seven spherot that Hashem had to create the world. I now create the world for you. So she's saying, I am the world spinner, and you live inside me. And that's actually the way it is. The woman is the environment, and the man dwells inside her. Dwells inside her physically, and then dwells inside the environment that she creates. She is the creator of the home. And she brings him into her. And that's what those seven circles are about, is creating the space. So the woman is the space creator. That's her role in marriage, is to create the space and invite the man to live inside the space that she creates. So it's interesting that, so we have this outside space of who we, of how we create space around him. But then we can go back to the internal space that we are. If you look at a male and female unclothed, they're the same shape except for their gender organs, where the male is on the outside and the woman's are on the inside. So the woman is really an internal being and the man is the external being, which is why he leaves the home to go do whatever he does. And then we protect the home. Now, again, roles are different, but the general theme of the role remains the same, whether a woman is working outside the home or not. And frankly, working outside the home does put a toll for a woman, does put a toll on the marriage, because she's not available to create, to spend as much time creating and have as much peace of mind as she needs to create the home as she might be able to do if she wasn't working outside the home. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't today. I'm not saying that we should either. It is a reality, however, that we do have to know that it does take a toll on our marriages, and then because it takes a toll on our marriages, it takes a toll on the community also. And if you look at our wider community, you see a community that is frayed at the edges, if not ripped to shreds in different places, because there is sometimes a lack of feminine investment in the home and then in the community. It's interesting to note that, in general, women can be men as well as men can be men, but men can't usually be women as well as women can be women. So women are the only ones who can be women. So if we're not being women, then the feminine energy is just missing from our community. So it is something to think about. How do we want to be women in our community, and how do we want to build our community through our feminine energy? So the feminine energy, then, is an internal energy. So let's see. Where did I put it on your sheet? Did I put it right here? I wanted to put, okay, so Ishto Keveto, and then this phrase. Okay, so Ishto Keveto, I put in Hebrew. His wife is like his home. So now you can see why the wife is like his home. She actually is his home. He dwells in her. He dwells in the space that she creates. So she is like his home. So they are considered as one in that sense. But then here's another phrase. Ezohi ishak shera osaratzon bala. Who is the kosher woman? The one who's osaratzon ba'ala. Now, I said it in Hebrew specifically without translating it because it's a tricky translation. You can translate it in two ways, and both ways are correct. Osaratzon ba'ala, translation number one, is the woman who does her husband's will. Osaratzon ba'ala, translation two, the woman who makes her husband's will. So it's both the one who does her husband's will and the one who creates her husband's will. So this reminds me of the famous pasuk in the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, where where the mother's talking to her daughter about can she go to college or not, and the daughter says, I don't know what we're going to do, you know, dad is the head of the household. And she says, you're right, the father is the head of the household, but the woman is the neck. She can turn the head any direction she wants it to go. So it's important to understand that as Jewish women, we need to do both. We do want to make our husbands happy by doing their will, and we do have a responsibility to guide them by creating their will. Both. Both are in our domain. And the Ishak Sheira is the one who somehow finesses both. It doesn't mean that you have to, you're not subservient that you have to do everything that he wants, but it is something to think about that helping him feel like you're doing what he wants and helping him want what you want to do are both important parts of being a woman and creating shalom in your marriage. So with that in mind then, one of the ways that I see the feminine energy and the masculine energy working together, one of my muscles, is an ocean. So we see in an ocean there are two significant forces. There's the undertow and the waves. So the waves come crashing and they make a lot of splash. And they're the ones that carve the rocks. But the undertow is what drives it all. So the undertow is really the feminine energy, the hidden power that drives the force. And the waves are the masculine energy. It's splashy and external. It's still there. You both are integral parts. I'm not discounting on it. I'm not saying that men aren't as important as women, but there's just a different energy that they both have. So the woman's energy is the internal driving force, and the men's energy is the external manifestation of that. One important place that that manifests for us, and it's an interesting place, is in hair covering. Hair covering, for those of you who do, those of you who are considering it, those of you who hate it, hopefully this will help. Hair covering is about harnessing the internal energy and focusing it. That's the whole point of it. It's not about saving your hair for your husband. Because, I mean, he can see your hair. You can wear a wig that looks better than your hair. Some people have questions about that, if you're allowed to do that or not. But basically, that is what we do today. But it's not about that. It's about what hair is. So if you think about hair is the most pliable part of our entire body. And it's the most expendable. We don't need our hair at all. It makes us look nice, but we don't need it. It won't hurt us if we don't have it. So it's the least necessary part of our body, and it grows opposite the most necessary part of our body. If we don't have a brain, nothing works. And there's no point in anything working, really, without a brain to guide it. So they grow in juxtaposition. But hair is also the most fluid, and we can shape it in many ways. I don't know the exact source, but I heard from Rabbi Avram Chaim Feuer that the hair represents imagination, the power of imagination. And it's up to us to shape that. So that's why God braided Chava's hair when she got married. When Adam and Eve got married, it says God braided her hair. Now, he was decorating her. A bride should look beautiful. But it was much more than decorating. It was his wedding gift to her. He took her hair and arranged it and said, "You are the one whose job it is to arrange the energy of this couple. That's in your hands." And then they got married, and after the wedding is when that first sin happened, where she used her ability to influence her husband and offered him something that broke the system, that the way that it was created, and we now live in Plan B of the world. It's a whole different concept, but basically she misused her ability to direct the energy of the couple. Then the Gemara tells us her hair went wild like the hair of Lilith. I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's the only place that Lilith is mentioned in the Talmud, is there, in that place. Lilith, Lilith. I'm not going into who Lilith is, but apparently her hair is very wild. And she is definitely seen as a negative character. So her hair went wild like Lilith, meaning her energy was all over the place. And after that, we needed to cover our hair. Covering our hair is saying, I'm in charge of the energy. I'm in charge of directing the energy of my home. My hair represents my ability to shape things and my ability to shape the energy of this couple. And so covering the hair says, I'm taking charge of that. It's my requirement, my right, and my responsibility to be in charge of directing the energy of this couple. And so I cover my hair to represent that. So that's where hair covering comes.
It's just a question. Because mm-hmm. it's so off topic, but as I listen to you, it's fascinating. And it's a hair covering story that I've never heard. And I've heard lots of hair covering stories. So what it makes me think about is, how many stories haven't I heard?
A lot.
Where do you get the riches of all of this? You know, because you get to hear on the journey, and I'm like, oh, really? So it's just like, it's just, I guess it's an expression of awe that I'm having right now, of like, okay, there's another one. And what others exist?
So that is what I love about Judaism. I feel like, have you ever gotten a present where there's a present inside a present inside a present, and you open it and you unwrap it, and then there's another one, you open it and unwrap it? So that's for Judaism, for me, that's what Judaism is. I unwrap the present, but instead of it being smaller, it's bigger. And then I unwrap it again, and it's like, wow, it's even bigger. And I unwrap it again, like, wow, it's even bigger. Every time I open a door, there's a whole new vista. It's not just a little closet. When I used to live in an apartment, I used to have dreams about opening a door and finding like a whole attic, like, wow, look at all this space, and there's even the furniture in it that I need, it's right there. But that's what Judaism is. Every time I open a door, there's like a whole, not just a dusty attic, there's a whole vista of places filled with doors that are just inviting you to go check them out.
So where does this particular teaching come from, this idea of, you know, being the idea of containing in this energy, where does that come from?
So it's a Kabbalistic concept, and it comes from learnings in the Gemara. I learned it from a two-hour shiur from Rabbi Avram Chaim Feuer, who's written books that I'm sure you've seen, Shemoneh Esrei and Growth Through Tehillim and a few other, I think that's what his Tehillim book is called, but he has a few different books. And this, it's interesting, when he gave this shiur at the AJOP conference, and all the women rushed over to him afterwards and said, this is fabulous, you have to write this. He said, it must be fabulous because the Yetzer Hara is so in my way to put this in writing, I can't get it published. And he's written other books. He just can't, for some reason, he's not, I mean, there is something standing in the way of him getting it together on paper so that it can be published. But you can get the tapes from the Umlasses, who tape all the New York stuff. And they're a fabulous, it's a good reference to know if you ever, I mean, I don't know how to get in touch with them, but there's not that many people named Umlas. And they have all the tapes of all the AJOP conferences and almost all the New York events that are there, they are the tape people. And if you ever are interested, and they know their tapes. So if you're ever interested in some esoteric concept, you can call them. I've done this before. Call them and ask them, and they'll say, sure, Rabbi Schmiegel has a series on that, and then you can buy it from him. So that's a nice thing to know. The Umlasses, U-M-L-A-S, their job is taping seminars, Jewish seminars. So they have a huge archive. And they sell the tapes. So hopefully it's just an invitation to learn more. There is so much cool stuff to know. The more you learn, the cooler it gets. Definitely. So I'm very thankful to be able to learn and share. I love it. I love learning. Okay. So the yud and the hey and the vav and the hey, I just wanted to go back to that for just a minute. So these different shapes then, in the name of Hashem, and again, we could do a little bit more of that some other time, but I just want to go back to the fact that it's masculine, feminine, and what the masculine and feminine energies do. So I'm sure many of you have read some of Vicki Vitatzer's work or listened to some of his things, but I don't know if he explains it exactly this way. I'm trying to remember if I got it from him or if it was built from other places, but certainly builds on what he's taught. So the concept of the masculine energy, as most of you know, is the energy of giving, the energy of inspiration. It's a fast energy. The concept of feminine energy is the energy of receiving, the energy of transformation, the energy of making things happen. They both need to work together. They're both vital. Nothing can happen without both of them. So you need to have them two together. So we can easily see that in male, female, and baby. But the way that I explain it is a four-part stage, not a three-part stage. So it's not just masculine-feminine synergy, baby being more than the masculine, more than the feminine. It's greater than the sum of the parts. But I see it in a four-part series. So let's look at a building for a minute. So you have this new Aish building, right? First, it was a concept. Some of it started in Donnie's head right there. So she, so part of it was there. So we'll talk about Rabbi Meyer or even Vicki, right? So concept, fabulous building for Aish. So that's the yud. The first is just the flash of inspiration. Our building's too small. We need something bigger, right? Flash of inspiration, that's the yud right there. Now, after a few conversations and can we do this and can we raise the money, they place a call to an architect. The architect comes and receives the vision. Right, so in this case, then, the visioners are the masculine, and the architect plays the role of the feminine, receiving. Yes, you need enough place for 500 people to pray. You need a kitchen. You need bathrooms. You need classrooms. You need movable walls. You need, and so he is now hearing it and putting it down on a piece of paper. The piece of paper actually now is the feminine. It received the vision. But it's still a piece of paper. It's really nothing. It's not a building, that's for sure. The paper now flips to become masculine. It becomes a causative agent and now directs the next part of the process. So we have the yud and we have the hey, and now we're going to have the vav is the masculine directing of the rest. So the paper now becomes a causative agent. Now the contractor is the feminine and the paper is the masculine, and the contractor has to receive the vision from the paper. Oh, in order to accomplish this, I have to order 14 pallets of drywall and 97 pallets of bricks and gobs of concrete and bunches of windows and whatever it is. He has to figure out how to take the vision and break it down into pieces. The contractor then makes the building happen, is the feminine energy that brings it all together. Because this building is not the vision, and it's not the blueprint, and it's not all the stuff that went into it, and it's not the contractor, and it's not all the labor that people put into it. It's the sum of it all. It couldn't exist without any one of those stages. So it is masculine, feminine. It has to be the four steps. So those four steps you'll see as themes in other places as you continue in your Jewish learning. Number four is important. The four steps are important. It's in davening. It's in the Beit HaMikdash. You'll see it all around as you start to listen for those four steps that parallel the four letters in the Shem Hashem. But in this case, right, so you just need to hear concepts like this again and from different angles, and it sinks in different places depending on where you are and how you're receiving at the time, how they're broadcasting and how you're receiving and the synergy of that. So if we're thinking about Vav then, in terms of involvement, how are we the creators of our home? How are we involved in subtle ways and in overt ways? That's the focus of this week. So the relationship here in the physical that I did want to focus on just for a few minutes, relationship in the sexual relationship, how this involvement might be, and I just put three words for us to think about, would be working on being attractive, flirtatious, and supportive. That's both overt and covert, all of those, really. So being attractive, everybody's heard, you need to look nice for your husband. So and not let them go to work where people are dressed and leaving you behind in pajamas, even if you get dressed later on. There are times, my husband prefers a shaitel over a hat, but there are times that I'll wear a shetel to breakfast and then switch to a het if I'm at home during the day, just because I know he prefers that. And he's going to the office and he sees people who are dressed, and you know, so then I definitely try to get dressed so that I'm dressed when he leaves, so that he can just see somebody who's put together. So, and it's not like I'm wearing heels, and it's not like I'm wearing fabulous jewelry or anything like that. There are people who dress nicer than me, but I at least like to put myself together so that my husband has that to see before he leaves the house, so that that's there. So, so being presenting yourself in an attractive way. Pretty pajamas, whatever it is, closing the door when you go to the bathroom, those kinds of things, keeping yourself attractive is important. Being flirtatious in different ways, whether it's an email and how you sign it, or the way that you put a plate in front of him, or the way that you brush past when it's mutter to brush past in a certain way. It's important to be flirtatious subtly sometimes, and sometimes not so subtly if you're in private. That's important, to be involved. So it's whether it's from behind the scenes, very subtle, making something that he likes, or sending an email that with that's just a piece of information but written in a nicer way, or very overt when you can. There's times to be very flirtatious also. And then supportive of who he is and what he appreciates. So being able to receive from him his broadcasts of interest and where he'd like to go sexually, where he'd like to go personally, where he'd like to go spiritually, and being supportive of him in those ventures. Sometimes he can broadcast it, and sometimes he needs somebody to bring it out of him, to elicit that from him. So supportive of a person who is more closed, and supportive of somebody who might be more open, but that's something just to think about in those ways. One thing that I want to speak about here is Chachma and Bina. Did I put that on your sheet or not? Okay, Chachma and Bina. So Bina is, in this, there's a lot of different ways to look at Chachma and Bina. And we're just going to look at one of those layers tonight. So Chachma, in general, is wisdom, and is the, in general, everybody uses Chachma and Bina, but in general, a man is stronger in the Chachma. Chachma is the way that a man processes information, and the way that he gains information. So the general way that a man gains and processes information is by being in contact with others, having experiences, having teachers, reading books, going out into the world and gathering information. In general, and of course we both use both, the way that a woman gains information and knowledge is through Bina, which is intuition. It means it comes from within her and her understanding. Her smaller forays into the rest of the world, which is one reason why a woman doesn't have to spend hours in a Beit Midrash every day, or on a regular basis, or even as a child. Her smaller forays into the world have a lot more impact on her ability to ferment them inside and cook up understandings that come from within. The Bina, however, requires a quiet place to develop. And that's what I want to speak about also. It's very important to give yourself a little quiet space, to allow your Bina to percolate. Because your home is built with Bina. Your lives are built with Bina. Your own understanding and your own connections to self, to husband, to God are built through Bina. And Bina takes time and quiet. So this is where those busy moms, those working moms, those post moms, those empty nest moms are thinking, I have no time in my life for quiet. You don't need a ton of time, but you do need some time. So again, that Cheshbon HaNefesh time at night, which is vital to your spiritual growth, try it sitting up instead of lying down, even if it's 2 minutes. Try some time in the car. Choose different times. A red light, if you're alone, could be a time that reminds you to think. It's 10 seconds, but you could think. During that time, I was driving next to somebody who was in a convertible, blasting music, slick back hair, rosary hanging from the rearview mirror. We both get to a red light at the same time. He's got a picture of the Virgin Mary glued onto the dashboard, right? So at the red light, he touches the Virgin Mary, kisses it, touches the rosary, kisses it, touches the Virgin Mary, kisses it, fingers the rosary, kisses it, and then the light changes. And I'm thinking, he just took a spiritual break. How amazing was that? Like, he's at a red light, the music is blasting, his hair is slicked back. Who would think if you'd see him walking the street at all? But he did. He used his red light for a spiritual break. It was really amazing to see it in him. So if he could do it, for sure we could do it. We just need to take the time sometimes for a spiritual break. But it's important to weave that in. So there are times when we have a speck more time that you can find here and there, maybe it's only once a month, maybe it's once a week, where you have 5 minutes that you could work on some type of meditation. It is important to, at some point, cultivate a quiet place inside you so that it exists. And then, when you have 1 minute, you can go there. But you have to build it. And building it does take a little more time than 1 minute here and there. But if you spend the time building it in 5 minutes and 10 minutes is over several months or a year or two or a decade, you will have a place to go when you have 1 minute. And you'll have a place to generate bina even when you're not thinking about it, because the place exists inside you. So it is important to create that space. So it could be it could be instead of davening. It could be in the middle of davening. It could be from a shortened davening. It could be from shortened sleep. Most of the things that you want to do mean giving up sleep, giving up exercise, giving up good nutrition, right? That's just life. Those are the places that you get to cut to build who you are. So, because you can't give up whatever your work hours are and whatever your children need from you and whatever your husband needs from you, you usually can't cut that. So there are other places you have to cut. And usually for me, anyway, it's exercise, nutrition, and sleep. So, So you just have to figure out, where are you going to put it in? Maybe you can find some time. Let's say you're paging through a magazine and you're thinking, why am I doing this? I could spend I have 5 minutes right now. Obviously, I'm paging through a magazine. Let me take that 5 minutes instead and close my eyes, sitting right here in the same chair, and think. We often don't do that. That's a very important thing to put into our lives, is the thinking, because the thinking creates the internal peace. The internal peace creates the woman who can be in a peaceful relationship. The internal thinking and the peace creates the woman who can create the peaceful home, who can receive her husband with patience, who can build a relationship with him, who can set an example for her children, who can be there as a solace to her neighbors and friends, and who can survive with strength through times of adversity.
What do you usually think about?
I actually sometimes set aside things to think about. So sometimes I'll think to myself, gosh, I just learned that there's four letters in the name of God, and she mentioned that that's related to Passover and fours. What are the fours in Passover? I don't have time to think about it right now. But online in the grocery store, I could say, what was that thing I wanted to think about? Oh yeah, fours. Let's think of this. Four cups, there's four mothers, there's four letters, there's four. What are all the fours that there are? Now sometimes you just can make your list of fours and then set aside. Okay, I thought of my list of fours. Sometimes you want to think about, sometimes you can go through, I was raised in different traditions, sometimes you might want to be sending white light to some of your children. You could tell how I was raised, very Bulgarian. white light. So sometimes I'll say Tehillim for my children if I have a few extra minutes, but then after the Tehillim, I'll stop and think, what is it that that child needs? Or I give a bracha at the door. When my kids leave for school, I just say two psukim from one of the Shir HaMalot. Say Hashem Yishmarcha Mikol Rai Shmart Nafshecha Hashem Yishmar Tzeitcha Uvoecha Me'atavi Adalam. That's like just a bracha. You should be guarded as you're going into the world. Your soul should be guarded in your goings and your comings. They're going out into the world. They need an extra bracha. But sometimes as they leave, I think, oh, please, Hashem, there's things that one really needs to be guarded from. Could you do a little extra? It's still thinking. You're thinking about that child and what they need and asking for Hashem to give them that special protection for that particular one. Not just a general, please help my family be healthy, but this child needs that particular thing. So you can't really give that child a special bracha unless you're thinking about that child and what they need. So sometimes you need to take a little retreat and think about it. I went to my mother one time as a retreat and to visit her. She wasn't feeling well. And I had a question for her. Which graduate program should I enroll in? This one or that one? I had narrowed it down to two. She said, oh, that's so great. You want to go to graduate school. Fantastic. Let's just sit down for a few minutes. We have a few days. Let's think about each one of your children, what they need, and what's coming up in their lives, and what will help best facilitate their physical, spiritual, and emotional growth over the coming year, and how you can, you know, what will be your action items for that. I totally knew it was coming, but I didn't say it. So, okay, fine. We spend a couple of days going through each one and writing up a whole list of what I need to do for each one. And then she, after she helped me think about each one, she said, with all of this, I don't see how graduate school is really going to fit into your life. Like, I really didn't ask you, should I go? I already decided that. I asked you which one. But she very sweetly knew how to spin it back around to,
You don't have to.
Nope. So she helped me rephrase. She said, instead of going after your MA, you need to be an MA. You have to be a ma instead of getting your MA. So
when do you get your MA?
So I don't know. I might never. But I have children that are healthier, I hope. And they're still giving me lots of occasions to grow, so I'm growing through my children as well, probably in ways that are stronger than either of those two master programs might have been, I like to tell myself anyway. And I might not get it, but there are choices that you make when you have a family of six instead of a family of less, which were some of the things that she tried to tell me as I had a family of six, and not something that I could hear at the time. So that's just the way it is. A lot of children takes a lot of extra finances and time and energy and all that stuff. Okay, so here is the homework that I'd like to assign for this week. In the morning, set a goal for the day, just one. And I don't mean exercise, but something a little, it might be a good one, so that might be the one that you want. But I don't mean like one of your tasks, make a dentist appointment. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. But a goal, like the goal is eat more nutritiously. Or be calmer, something like that. A goal for just one. Pick one. You can't do like everything all at once. Pick one goal for the day, and in the evening, evaluate how well you did it, how well you achieved it. Why did you achieve it the way that you achieved it? Did you achieve it well? Why? Did you not achieve it? Why? So go to that place too, and then continue on. How might you have done better? So actually lead it to the place, not just noticing where it was that you fell down, but analyze what was the reason that it didn't work or what was the reason that it worked well, and how can you do better in the future.
So, do you want us to do the same goal every day and see how we improve, or do you want us to pick a different one?
I want you to have the exercise of analysis. That's really the I'm glad you asked that. You can pick a different goal every day. The point is to establish for yourself a habit of setting intention and then evaluating how it went. So at night, there needs to be an evaluation. How did it go? And pick one thing. You don't have to evaluate everything. But pick one thing and evaluate how well did it go, but keep going. Don't just end with that didn't go very well. You have to keep going after that. Why not? And figure it out. And then how could it have been better? And then practice. Sometimes you can replay a scenario. So sometimes you're practicing the sentence to say, and sometimes you can visualize the same thing working better. But actually spend the time to replay the movie. Visualize it differently. So let's say you chose to eat healthfully for the day, and at your low time in the afternoon when you're usually tired, right before the kids come home or right after they just came home, that's when you go for the chocolate pudding, and you did, right? And you didn't just have one. You had one with whipped cream and a second half one because the kids couldn't even see you, and you did, right? So now think, okay? So now you want to visualize that and visualize opening the fridge, feeling the need for the chocolate pudding, closing the fridge and saying, I have made a choice today to eat healthfully, and this is not in my goal. And you closed it and walked away. So just visualize that. Maybe you need to close it and walk away to something else. What will be your substitute? Maybe you're going to make a cup of tea. But you need to visualize how are you going to handle it so that tomorrow when it comes up, you can handle it differently. So in that case, you might want to try the same goal. Or you might just, but the main thing here is the exercise of setting intention and then evaluating at the end of the day. So, and then I put here, spend some time thinking. So, that's right. Which might make you think about honey, but yeah. So just think about your honey and spend some time thinking. Okay, thanks. We'll see you next week.